This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Paul Bertels, Senior Consultant for FarmGate Insights. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Paul Bertels next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Much attention has been given to the potential demand impact on row crop prices if they're accepted as suitable feedstocks for sustainable aviation fuel. Paul Bertels, senior consultant with FarmGate Insights, says the SAF market has huge potential, but it will develop much differently than ethanol's role in gasoline.
One of the issues that I see now with SAF is to try and grow the awareness among, you know, particularly row crop agriculture, what the potential could be for this market. One of the problems we actually run into, though, is they remember, hey, you know, here's how we built the ethanol industry, and it was all these farmer dollars, and we can do it again. And I think one of the things that gets lost on them and that, you know, I've been trying to clarify is, okay, the potential for making SAF out of ethanol is there. I mean, the technology exists. No one's doing it commercially to date. The problem is, unlike ethanol, where, you know, you just splash blend it into gasoline and away you go, you're actually making a kerosene molecule out of ethanol, and it's a very chemically intense process, and therefore, you know, very capital intense process. So, you know, people think, okay, we're just going to start throwing all this ethanol in a jet fuel. It's like, no, it's not like that. You know, you have to basically chemically convert ethanol into kerosene. And that's, you know, the potential for a huge market is there, but, you know, there's a number of steps and quite a bit of capital that has to, you know, be invested to actually do that.
Is it any easier to make sustainable aviation fuel from, like, soy biodiesel or other oilseed crops? Is there an advantage for ethanol over others, or do they each have their own sequence that must be accomplished?
Well, so you really have two different processes there. So let's take soybean oil, for instance, or distillers corn oil, tallow, you know, what have you, one of those lipids. Basically, the process that they now use to make renewable diesel, not biodiesel, but renewable diesel, is really the same thing that you would do to make SAF from lipids. The only difference is renewable diesel it's a lot longer carbon chain, so you have a shorter cut of carbon to make the kerosene or the jet fuel. Right now, they're doing that right now. You know, Diamond Green Diesel is doing that down in Port Arthur, Texas. They just turned one of their renewable diesel plants over to make SAF, or have made the investment so that they can make SAF if they want. There's a couple other plants in the U.S. that are doing it. That's right now. The advantage is right now you can do it. When we look at the ethanol to jet process, so it's a different chemical process of making it. And I think the one advantage that you'll eventually see with ethanol to jet is, you know, lipids are, they're, you know, soybean oil. It's a finite amount of that volume out there. You know, whereas the potential for cranking out more ethanol from corn, sorghum, or, you know, maybe someday even cellulosics, you know, I think the potential feedstock supply is much greater than if you're looking at just, say, you know, things that are a little more limited, like soybean oil, tallow, used cooking oil.
I spent time talking with a representative of Southwest Airlines, and they're certainly energized toward moving toward a fuel that is better for the environment, but quickly recognized and admitted it cost a lot more than the fuel that they're using today, and fuel is a big part of the expense toward their bottom line. him saying that we needed not just one tax break, but multiple tax breaks to bring this about. There was a period of time in the ethanol industry that it took investment dollars and over a period of time to lower the cost of production. What role now in terms of investment, and just how far off of affordability are we at this stage?
In our analysis, so if you do the HEFA process, so that's, you know, using soybean oil or tallow, or, you know, one of the lipids, we estimate that the cost of the finished product, the jet fuel, the SAF, is going to be probably at least double the price of petroleum jet. You know, when we did the analysis on ethanol to jet, we figure it's probably closer to 2.5 times the cost. Now, to your point, like we saw in the ethanol industry, you know, over time, as more and more of these plants come online, you know, you will see that price differential shrink, you know, once you get out to nth plant economics. But right now, I mean, you're looking at double. So to the Southwest point, you know, you have to have this ability to stack credits. And, you know, we have the new credit that came on with 45Z, which replaced the old SAF tax credit. It's hard to say old. It's only been in place for 2 years before it expired. But it also got rid of the blender's tax credit that, you know, people associate with biodiesel. So you would get, you know, the $1 for the blender's tax credit, you would get at least $1.25 for the 40B tax credit. So, you know, if you're looking at something that's, let's say, 2X, you know, you're probably a $3 differential. So, you know, you're with just those two, you're at like 2.25. So you're getting closer. And then if you throw in a state incentive, like, you know, in Illinois, we have the $1.50 consumption credit. Minnesota has a production credit, Nebraska has production. A number of states have these credits. So once you stack those, you can get fairly close then to closing that price differential. The one problem is now that 45Z has come in, you know, it eliminated two of those, blender's tax credit and the SAF credit. So you're seeing the credit that you earn from 45Z is going to be significantly lower already, particularly, you know, things like soybean oil, it's been very detrimental to that. You know, you're probably looking at a 45Z credit on soybean oil SAF at maybe 40 cents a gallon versus, you know, you got a buck for the blender's tax credit, you got at least a buck and a quarter for the 40B. So, you know, you've already taken a pretty big hit on those.
So if we're going to move ahead with these renewable fuels, renewable biodiesel, and sustainable aviation fuel from farm feedstocks, there's going to have to be some investment from somewhere, or else customers are going to be paying a whole lot more for airline tickets.
Absolutely. You know, and so the 45Z credit expires at the end of 2027. So, you know, you have, you know, a little more than 2 years to go on it. But just imagine going to the banker and saying, hey, you know, I want to buy this farm, but I'm only going to farm it for 3 years. And then after 3 years, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think the banker would turn you out. Same thing on the, you know, in the investment community. I want to build a refinery, but I only know that the incentive is going to be there for two more years. It just doesn't work that way.
So talk about Washington and what investment needs to be made, either from tax dollars, what regulatory action needs to take place to help convince those who have the money, who want to invest in this industry, to feel like they have the green light to move ahead. Because clearly, without regulation, it's probably not going to grow with the economics that we see today.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, and I always tell people, I said, you know, what you hear from the airline industry, I think they're being very forthright. You know, they want to decarbonize. That's true. You know, it's the cost of fuel is a significant factor in their bottom line. To get people to make those investments, I mean, the first thing that clearly has to happen is they need to expand the life of 45Z. Or, you know, if they have a better idea than 45Z, you know, it needs to have a longer life just so that people can make, you know, investments. You know, you just can't make a $1 billion investment on 2 years of policy. So that's the first thing. When you kind of start digging down into it, So, for instance, taking corn ethanol to jet. Currently, EPA does not have an approved pathway for doing that. So, you know, it would take somebody like Gevo, Summit, or LanzaJet. One of those would have to submit a pathway proposal to EPA to get it approved, so that, you know, it actually would qualify under the renewable fuel standard. So that's one thing that has to happen. Another thing, and I know the airlines would not agree with me on this, I believe that jet fuel should be an obligated fuel under the renewable fuel standard. If it was an obligated fuel, then the fuel producers would have to produce certain amount of it. You know, they would have to show RINs, just like you see with biodiesel or with ethanol for light duty vehicles. Gasoline is an obligated fuel. Diesel fuel is an obligated fuel. Jet fuel isn't. So if EPA would take that step and say, okay, you know, at some point you need to start showing credits for renewable jet fuel, I think that would also help the industry. But once again, you know, the airline industry is adamantly opposed to, you know, having that become an obligated fuel.
Well, in my days on the farm, there's one thing I know was uncomfortable, and that was straddling barbed wire. Straddling the fence is not easy to do. So here we are on renewable fuel policy as I flow this analogy. On one side, you have the Biden administration in their exit offering some information from Treasury, offering some information from USDA on proposals. But now you have the Trump administration and the teams are being built. And the question is what role this administration is willing to play and what legislators of the 119th are going to do toward this. What's the push in Washington now? And what's the need?
Well, in the last Congress, we saw a couple bills come forward, not just for SAF, but for renewable fuels that, you know, never made it across the finish line. You know, one of those was a 1-year extension of the blender's tax credit, which SAF would qualify for. The thinking behind that was, okay, since the Biden administration was so slow coming out with 45Z rules, it would give the industry, the bio-based diesel industry, some time to make the transition. Once again, that bill never crossed the finish line. There was also a bill that would have extended the 45Z, I believe it was 7 years, and would also have put in a requirement that it would only apply to domestic feedstocks, which, you know, is another big problem that we're seeing in the bio-based diesel market right now. You know, we've seen a tremendous surge in imported tallow, you know, a lot of that coming from, you know, Brazil, Australia, Argentina, and we've seen an even bigger surge coming from used cooking oil coming primarily from Asia. So the way 45Z is set up is that credit only goes to domestically produced fuels. That's a good thing. But it doesn't say anything about the feedstock. So, you know, our concern is if you don't go back in and somehow, amend that law with domestic only feedstock, you're just going to see more and more Chinese used cooking oil come in and in all likelihood displacing more and more soybean oil.
So when you're sitting in a farm meeting and we're talking about potential, you consider how many airplanes are in the sky every minute in the United States, how many airplanes are in the sky around the globe, and the transportation that is least likely to go electric, you arrive at the airplane. When we talk about potential, how big was ethanol back in the day, and how big is sustainable aviation fuel potentially to the market today?
Well, so back in the day, you know, I don't think anybody really talked about the blend wall. I know corn growers, we came up with this kind of model of 15 by 15 by 15, so 15 billion bushel corn crop, 15 billion gallons of ethanol by 2015. And people kind of laughed at us about it, but you know what? We got there. You know, and we were maybe off by a year, but we got there. The problem you see is the motor gas market is slowly shrinking. It'll probably shrink more slowly now than it would have under the Biden administration. But, you know, that market is shrinking. Right now, I think the Department of Energy's estimate for, like, global jet fuel use for 2025 is just north of 100 billion gallons. So when you think about SAF, right now you can blend up to a 50% blend of SAF with jet fuel. So, you know, if you just did that simple math, you know, the potential right now would be 50 billion gallons globally. U.S. market is probably about 23 or 24 billion gallons. So, you know, that potential would be about, you know, 12 billion gallons of SAF. You know, that's in 2025, and that's projected to grow, you know, into the out years.
So spitball that to bushels, either of corn or biodiesel or in tons from a perspective of the producer of feedstocks.
So if you're converting ethanol to jet fuel, and once again, this is a little hypothetical because, you know, the commercial side of this hasn't come yet.
We're spitballing here.
Yeah, you get about 1 gallon of ethanol would produce about 0.4 of a gallon of jet fuel. So you lose about 60% of your volume going from ethanol to jet fuel. Now there is some renewable diesel that would come out of that, but you know the biggest problem with ethanol is, you know, you have oxygen on, you know, so it's a 2-carbon molecule with oxygen on it. You got to get rid of that oxygen. Well, just without getting into heavy chemistry, from a molecular weight, you've lost, you know, about 60% of the weight of that molecule right there. And then once you get to that final conversion step, you're probably only going to get 70 to 90% of that's going to be converted into jet fuel. You'll produce some renewable gasoline. You'll produce some renewable diesel. So, you know, somewhere in there between 0.4 and maybe on the high side, half a gallon, every gallon of ethanol.
How much of a demand are we talking about here? Is it as big as the growth that came from ethanol that now consumes about 5 billion bushels of U.S. corn a year? What's the potential here?
Yeah, actually, it's bigger. It's bigger than the current biofuel market. So when you think ethanol, biodiesel, and renewable diesel, the potential for SAF is bigger than that because, A, you can go up to that right now the 50% blend. No single commodity can meet that by themselves. You know, it is going to take in all of the above. This market potential is so big, it's going to take everybody. That said, you know, when you specifically talk to the cellulosic guys, the algae guys, whatever, we always say, look, if your first generation, which is, you know, soybean oil, tallow, what have you, and second generation, which is ethanol, corn or sorghum ethanol to jet, if those two never succeed, you will never see the cellulosic part of this come. So, you know, keep doing your research, you know, keep pointing to, yeah, there's the opportunity there for all of us. But if you torpedo soybean oil or you torpedo corn ethanol go into this, that market is never going to arrive.
Okay, so we're spitballing here still. If 5 billion for the ethanol demand that we have in the U.S. today, how many billion bushels of something will it take to accomplish even the 50 billion mark for sustainable aviation fuel?
So if you did just ethanol at 3 gallons of ethanol per bushel, well, to get to 50, that would take you, 18, 19 billion bushels for just the ethanol portion, but then you have to reduce that because you're not able to convert all of that ethanol in. So, you know, if you did that by then again, a factor of 3, you know, it would probably take 40 billion bushels if you were going to do it all with corn ethanol, which, of course, you can't.
Let's talk about the steps that it would take to help us realize this potential.
Yeah. So I would say the first thing that has to happen is you have to expand the life of 45Z, or if there is some replacement, you know, incentive, it has to have a longer shelf life. It has to have a shelf life of, I'd guess, at least 10 years for, you know, for the capital markets to say, okay, let's make that investment. When you talk about pipelines, the other thing about going ethanol to jet, we'll see how the new 45Z GREET model works and USDA's new program. by my thinking, there's no way that you can hit that 50% carbon reduction without carbon capture and sequestration. There's a lot of different steps you can get. You can get pretty close. But, you know, unless the new GREET model is really favorable, I don't think you can drop below that 50% threshold without carbon capture. So, you know, now that is just opens a whole new can of worms in farm country. Farmers don't necessarily want the pipeline coming across their land. Farmers in places where they're looking at sequestration beds, you know, they don't. You know, they feel like they may be the dumping ground for carbon every place. But I honestly think this is one area where the ag industry has really kind of fallen short is I think they should have done a much, much better job of explaining the importance of carbon capture sequestration to ag markets because, you know, ethanol, you know, it just does not qualify unless you can cut that carbon score in about half.
So what now does industry, better question. So what now does industry ask of the 119th and of the Trump administration to help give this the push that it needs?
Well, I think the first thing for the Trump administration is, you know, Mr. President, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, there were some good things in the Inflation Reduction Act. From ag standpoint, you know, there's a lot of things in there that probably ain't so good, but, you know, just the push towards, you know, incentives for carbon capture, the push for, you know, incentives or increasing the incentives for clean hydrogen, the new clean fuel producer, the 45Z, those are all things that can be beneficial to ag. So, you know, in your, you know, Mr. President, you have the zeal for, you know, getting rid of everything that came from the previous administration, you know, be strategic in how you make those cuts. Don't just throw everything out because there are some good things in there. That would be for the president. For Congress, I would say, you know, find a way to extend, you know, 45Z or whatever and, you know, find a way to curtail, feedstock imports so that, you know, at least domestic feedstock have an equal playing field.
Well, Paul Bertels, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Thanks for your work for the country and for corn growers and for the nation. It's Open Mic, Paul, and you get the last word today.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate this opportunity, and like I said, SAF is a huge market potential, but, you know, it's going to take a lot of work to get there.
Our thanks to Paul Bertels, Senior Consultant for Farmgate Insights, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.